go to my daughter Donna's up, lives up on the other side of Brett's. They were going to go up there, and the water came down Pennsylvania Avenue and just about washed them off the avenue. They did get turned around and got back out. A bottle gas tank floated down, hit the side of the car, came down through that quick. Well, I didn't know the water was that high over there or coming down over there. But then when they came back, they went up to my son's home. It's on up above the Miller house, above the manor there. And they all went up there, and I came around there. Of course, I was checking back where I could see the house here, and I came back around there to check on them again. And that's when that was a lot later. A lot of things had happened. It was way after dark when a couple of fellows walked up the road towards my son's house, and they said, "Do you have that boat down there?" Parked down the next street, and I said, "Yeah." The fellow said, "There's some old people trapped in the house of St. George." Said, "Would you go help get them out?" "Yeah, boat." And I said, "Sure, we'll try." Well, the fellow said, "I'll go with you." He said, "I'll help you." So I said, "Well, I'll be right down." I said, "Where is that?" And they said, "Right down at the bridge, St. George." And I said, "Well, I'll hook on to the boat and I'll be right down." And by the time I got down there, all the emergency cars were sitting there, and we started trying to get the boat in the water. The boat is heavy. It's a lot of weight. The water was up, and where the little driveway comes up to the bridge here, the guardrails, and you had to put the boat right out into swiftest water there to try to get across the guardrail. So we tied a rope to it, and some of the fellows got in clear up to all way above their waist in the water there, and pushed the boat out, and we got it up to the guardrail where we didn't have to lift it too far, and we got it across the guardrail on that side. And then the fellow that came after me, I gave him a life jacket and put on. I told him when we went to leave, I said, "Now, see, I didn't notice whether any trees was growing in that area or not." I said, "Now, if we hit something solid with this prop," I said, "I don't know the way of getting out of here." And the water was going right through to the bridge, and it was up, clear up, and going through to the bridge. And I said, "If we're out there and we hit something, and the motor goes off, the boat's going to the bridge, and you just have to swim as hard as you can swim to get out." And I made one pass towards the house there, and the water coming around the house. Of course, I wasn't going full speed. The boat has a 50 horsepower engine on it, but I was actually expecting to hit something when I was going through there. And when I got hit that swift water, it threw me, and I had to come back around. And that time, next time, and I gunned the boat, and I got across there, and I got on the lee side of the house where it was kind of calm in there. And I got the boat right up against the side of the house, up to the second store window, and I held the boat in as a vent pipe. Going right up to the roof there, and I held on to it, and the other fellow had a hammer, and he broke out the storm window, and people were flashing a light inside, and we knew where they were, and we broke out the storm window and tore the other window out, and we got four of them on there. Mr. Cross, I hadn't seen him for years. In fact, I thought he was dead. I'd known Bob years ago, but when I worked away from here in the daytime all the time. He had one leg off. I think he's the first one. When we get him to the window, then I just pull him right back on the boat and cover him up with what we had. They were wet and scared. So we took four of them at the time, and I think a dog was in there. We took it in with us that trip. But they told me before I went in there, said there's a lady back in the rooms back in there that has a heart condition. I had to keep the boat into the house there, and the other fellow, he would be by himself. We had a rope we put in the wind there and tied the bow of the boat, and I'd hold the other part in on that pipe, and then I got a hold of where the eave trough used to be, and I'd hold it on. And when in this time I said I need another man because we're going to have to get a woman carried out of there. And one fellow said, I'll go with you. And I said, can you swim? And he said, no, I can't. I said, well, you better not go then. Another fellow stepped up and he said, well, I can swim. He said, I'll go. So I gave him one of those life cushions. I had two life jackets and two life cushions in there. And I gave him one. I said, you hang on that if anything happens. So we went back to the house. And when I got her out of the boat and I pulled her back and put her on the seat beside where I sit, and I gave her my life jacket, and they had thrown a blanket out of the house here, and I put it around her. She said that she was having a problem breathing, and I told the fellow, I said, I'm going to take her on in here. So I run her on in, and we put her fully back in the ambulance. And then when we go back next time, well, I could see the water raising a little bit more on the, it was clear up above the window then, upstairs. The beds were floating upstairs. And so when we got back then, I said, we'll just take everybody that's in there. And the two boys with me and the people, we had seven in the boat the last time. I got them all. I was afraid that the water would break through on the upper side of the house. And if it did, with those windows all closed, it would have raised up real quick. It could have drowned them. That's why I was scared of them. I thought maybe the house might start breaking up, but water's coming around pretty swift. But the house still stands there. It's a good house. I know it's standing. A lot of repairs to do. And I came back to town, brought the boat back, and I took it back up and was going to park it in the same place. I'd made a round up on the one street to see how Hilda and the kids was. And I came back down, and I was going to park on the next street, and there's a lady stopped me. She was talking to someone else. She had stopped another pickup truck and talked to them. So she stopped me, and she asked me if I was the National Guard. And I said, no, I'm not with the National Guard. Then she told me about her daughter being missing down Hollow Meadows. And I know she thought that the girl drowned. She said she's 20 years old. She can't swim. And said that they had several hours early. She said that her and her husband, when the Jeep upset, they looked around, she was gone, they didn't see her after that. And I told her, I said, well, I don't have any light. I noticed I didn't have no light at St. George. I guess through all the excitement, I didn't take my trolling motor battery, which runs my light. I have a 300,000 candle power light. It was sitting on the back porch here, a battery charger. I didn't even have it in the boat, why the light wouldn't work. So, I said, it gets daylight, I'll go hunt for her. I made her that promise. I said, I'll go hunt her. Then I went down and parked across from the fire hall there, across the road from below the manor. And I got back in the van, covered up with a blanket. I was wet. Everybody was wet down there. And started getting warm, and someone flashed the light and went in. And it was Bloom, the game warden. And a couple fellas with him, and he said, there's some people on rooftop down in Hollow Meadows, and they can hear him hollering. Asked me if I could take the boat down and try to get him. He said they didn't have any chance of getting any boats till, you know, later on that day, and this is in the middle of the night. Well, I said, if we get the boat in, we'll try to get him. So we got down about halfway down the lane in Hollow Meadows as far as we could get, and we had to manhandle the boat and got it in there. And Humphrey Boy lives down low town there. He says, I'm going to go with you. He said, I'm going to help you. And I said, I'll need help. And so we got down. We got close. They had a little hand light. And he'd hear hollering, hear the person hollering. I flashed the light over, and she's in a tree right where the swiftest water comes. There's a piece of a house in the trees there, and she was over from it. And I knew if I'd run the motor right down into the tree, I would probably hit something at a prop, and then we'd just have to all stay there. So there's a tree right up from it, and we had this rope that the emergency squad had, and I tied it on the bow of the boat even before we went out there so we could get it out in the water, and then I pulled the rope in. We had it on the boat, and I told the Humphrey Boy, I said, I'm going to get up next to that tree there up above her, and I said, you snatch this rope around the tree, because I'm going to put the motor in neutral, not turn the prop, you know, while he's going down into that tree. And I said, when I holler, you let it off a little bit. Boy strong, he grabbed that tree. The boat was in that swift water, and I thought he was going to get away from it. He hugged that tree and he held her on there, and he got the rope around it and he let it off. And you know that boat went right down there, right under her feet where she's in the tree. And then I got her to, I had to, time getting her to let go, but I got her hands loose, and I got her down so her foot, she could stand on top of the motor, get her foot down top of the motor, and I got her on the boat. Of course, then I gunned the boat to, and I told him, I said, when I start the motor up, start coming up out of here, you let go of the rope. And so we went out, and then I was heading for the shallow water, and I run her aground, around up in that field, and I started digging into mud, but I told the girl, I said, you don't have to worry now, we can wade out from here, there'll be no swift water. And then those people along, they'd come down along the field, and I threw them the rope, and they got a hold of it, and they pulled the boat, and we got it up and out. Got it back up, and they took her and put her in the ambulance. And I didn't know her, and here she had been up here with my granddaughter before. And then the lady, Mrs. Snyder, the one at St. George, had the heart problem. She died here a few weeks ago. I didn't know who she was, but her son and I graduated together. They lived down in the country. He used to come up to my home and stay, and we ran around together till he went to California to work in the aircraft industry. And I was going to go with him, but changed my mind, and he went out there. But then I didn't know who she was till I was at the house here, and he came up and he said, Don, he said, did you get my mother out of the house in St. George? He'd come in from California. Well, I said, I don't know. Marshall was dark. I said, did she have a pacemaker? And he said, yeah. I said, well, we got her out then. She was clear up in the upstairs. They were all upstairs up in, I guess they thought, the lady that ran the place thought, you know, they told them if they would just go upstairs, they'd be safe. And she thought they would be, but never dreamed the water would come up that high. It's like we never dreamed it would come up that high here. So I thought it would get up maybe up to the house, because I know the elevation from here at the top of the riverbank. And if it's going to come over, it is almost, the elevation right now here at the corner is almost the same as the top of the bank here at the end of the street. So it's about level. There's a little dip in between there where my mother's house is. And I knew if the water came up much higher, that we was going to get some water, but I didn't think it was going to get up that high. Because this stuff, I have my television, I just put it in a week before. It and what's on out there was almost $800. And television went forward on, and it pulled all the stuff off the top of it and went down the mud on the back. And the television floated face down, and it didn't have anything in it. All we had to do was clean it off on the outside. And it just, the way the wires and everything was, it just floated up that way and stayed again. Because that television never been cleaned outside. There wasn't anything clean out, a little dust. It must be. It must be. But it sure run that. It cost me that little box there cost me $400 to replace. And didn't have it a week. The company said that it would cost too much to repair it. He sent, Paul Mosey sent it back to Houston Satellite, and they said it would cost too much to repair it. So I bought another, and I had all the other stuff. And the logs that came in, my damage outside the house was the logs came through and knocked my carport door off out there, and I had three big logs on the carport, and my freezer back there, it flowed up and was on top of all of them. And the meat was still frozen it, and no water went in. It floated right up and sat on top of the logs. And I still have that to clean up out there. I'm going to cut some of the hedge down, logs in there. We were protected. I think Mr. Sheets' house over here got all the logs in his yard, and the ones that got through, my hedge held some of them off of doing any damage. Our basement was full of water, and of course, the boys came around and pumped out my basement for me. Stevens boy, and there were three of them. I offered to pay them. They said, hey, and they worked hard pumping out. They said, you didn't charge for use your boat that night, did you? I said, no. I said, we don't charge nothing. And they pumped out for me.
That's a great story.
Yeah. They were.
Tucker County's full of heroes.
I told Hill, I don't know if anybody would do. Anybody that wasn't afraid wouldn't have hesitated a bit of trying to help people. You just don't think, you just go ahead and do. You know, if a person just sit around and think, well, I might do this, I might do that, they don't get nothing done. But when you want to help someone, you go ahead and do it. That's the way I. Most anybody, of course, you can see someone that would be afraid of water or something might not, but I'd say about any of these people that I face with and go with, I'd say would do the same thing. And without hesitating, they'd try to help a person.
Did you think it was kind of a miracle that Amy Moore survived? She not knowing how to swim?
She was very lucky, I think, because the trees that she got in there, the water was come swift right down through there. And I don't think the condition she was in getting that far, of course, she said she had got on a piece of a house or something and that bowed a little bit there and got in that tree. If she would have went past that, I think she would have went right on down the main part of the river and been gone. I don't think she could have caught anything else. It would have been hard for her to catch anything else. It would have been, there was a space between those trees and on the next ones to where there was nothing but rough water. And I don't think she could have survived that. She had been mighty lucky. She was lucky in the way it was, but she had been doubly lucky if she would have got a hold of something before she got thrown back out in the main part of the river. People at St. George would have, I think, other than the way it turned out, other than the shock, the cold, the condition is in, would have probably got along all right up in top by staying, but that's, you didn't know. They were cold and they were just naturally just soaking wet. The water was clear up in the upstairs. And their age and everything, and I think that had a lot to do with Mrs. Snyder, you know, not living long after the flood. Strange thing, Danny, my son, we were sitting out at the kitchen table here. This was right after flood, and he told Hill and I, he said, you know, he said, you're going to see a lot of the older people drop off here right quick. Now, how he knew that, I don't know. But boy, they did. They started dropping off. We lost a lot of older people here. I don't know why it'd be, whether it's the flood actually gets to them that much or what. How many did we have here that just right away, just one right after the other dropped off? And he said that would happen. Well, I asked him how he knew one of these days. I found out he would think that would happen, because usually I thought, well, you know, if they survive and not injured or anything, I guess it weighs heavy on them. My mother's biggest loss, as far as she was concerned, was her albums, her pictures that she had through the years. She lost those. But I picked her home up. I got some more work to do down there. I've been working on it, you go down there, she looks around, she says, you know, she said, my house is fixed up real nice. She said, I believe the old Cheat River done me a favor. Now, that's her outlook at it. She would not accept, for a long, long time, her age, she wouldn't accept the meal on wheels. She says, that's for old people and all that. Here she is, 90 years old. finally got her to start taking meals that they bring up here this other week. She fell and hurt her hip again, and the one that she has the steel joint in. And so she's kind of hampered getting around a little bit there for a while. But she's just tickled to death. Now I'll go down, she'll say, boy, they 11:30, they brought my lunch right in here to me. And she, before she wouldn't accept them. I guess, just like the doctor said, doctor had operated on Elkins for her hip, put the hip joint in. She said she's one tough person. I said, but you raised 6 kids through a depression with no insurance or anything, you've got to be tough.
Is she a little bit bitter along with that, or is she pretty cheerful?
She's cheerful. Oh, she don't, nothing happened. She doesn't, she'd tell you how nice she's got it, and she'd say, well, things fixed up real nice. To her, you know, it's real nice. We got a lot of work to do, but everything's just nice to her. It's real nice. So. Yeah.
What actually happened? I mean, how do you explain the flood, if you thought at all? But
just too much water. A lot of them were like to blame it on the old dike around Mill Pond up here and all, but I can't see that, because that much water, as near as the valley is, would have come over top regardless. I told Hilly several years ago that we had no worry about the river unless it got high enough and so much water that the channel over here wouldn't carry it, and if it starts down the railroad side, we would get wet. And I've watched the river through all the years, and even at the 54, it just got to the top of the banks over here. Even the big flood of 1888, according to the records that I hear, that if the water just at that time got to the elevation of the bottom step of the courthouse, which would be about the courthouse wasn't there, but they say that had been the elevation of the high water had been, it wouldn't even been up here in the bottom. So the 1888 flood wouldn't have bothered the bottom here. The water, for one thing, the water first came around. It came down the rain channel and came across down here. That's why so much stuff was washed over on the railroad track, because the water came from the river that way, you know. And then when I came down over the hill to look up here, and I'd left the porch light on, and it hadn't bothered us, so I could see the water right up the porch, and I told my son-in-law, I said, you know, I believe we're going to be all right. And we went back up over the hill, went downtown, and then when the big surge came, and it just rolled right over everything. If you had put a concrete wall up there, even if you put it high and hadn't put it clear down along here, the water would have still came in, you know, it would come around. And unless you put it up high, it would have come over it anyhow. There's too much water for the narrowness of the valley up here. And then too much water came in at one time. It would have come through there regardless. And when the flood of 54, 52 back when it was, I stayed up on the dike here till the water was getting ready to come over it. And I could see then what was going to happen. It would just come right through the pond then and go out the other end, and it did. Unless it got a lot higher than that and filled that whole valley up, it wasn't going to come down the railroad track then. It didn't. But whatever they do, other than control dams on there, if the water would get up that high, it would still come down across. Even if they put a concrete wall up there. You know, I worked in around construction for a lot of years, and we built dams and all this stuff, but the water there, if you'd have put a wall there to keep it from coming down across there, and that much water, it would come out here. We'd come around unless you'd put a wall clear down through town. And then with much rain we had, you'd have all the water coming from the hills coming down this side. So you'd had a water problem with your way. It might not have been as bad if you'd had a retainer wall clear around there to hold the water. But I don't think they'll ever build that here. I don't think there's any way that the Corps of Engineers, of course, it's been said that if they would have put the dam in at Rollberg at one time, that they would have put a retainer wall around. But I couldn't see even with a wall where it would help as much, that much water. Then you got the water come down the Blackwater River and the Dry Fork River for the other side, and then down St. George. I don't know what you'd do to protect that. If they get that much water, it's going to come.
Is your idea about flood control dams? Have you had any new ideas about that since the flood?
Well, they've had a lot of thought. They had a lot of thought about flood control dams when they talked about building the Rollberg Dam before. I was several hearings, and I got in the middle of quite a controversy back then. And there was ideas that you put a series of smaller dams up in the headwaters of the river. But to me, I know nowhere up there that you could actually put a dam that would hold the amount of water that you'd have to hold for flood control. Because you're talking about from here up, it's the same as going up stair steps. You know, your elevation's going right on up. And if you would put a dam across the stair steps to hold any amount of water, you'd have to put it way high. Because you don't have no area way out that to hold water. If you had a big basin up there somewhere, but I imagine if anywhere that you would put a dam above Parsons here, on the Chavis Fork River, to hold any amount of water, you'd have to flood clear across through the Kearns in that area to hold any amount of water. In fact, you'd flood a lot of area to try to hold the amount of water that you'd have to hold for flood control. Now, in Pendleton County, they have a lot of earthen dams all over the area over there. I know some of the companies that we dealt with through the years built them all over Grant and Pendleton County, that they do control quite a bit of water, the number of them that they have. They're just holding dams. I talked to Terry Fairbanks several years ago, and he was I don't know what position he had with that department working out of Morgantown, but he told me that there was no way that they could get those kind of dams in Tucker County on account of the streams and the way it was. The only near stream here, he said, that they could possibly put one of those on that the government would do would be Leading Creek over in Randolph County. But it takes, to hold any amount of water, it takes a pretty good-sized basin. And you can, these sharp hollows there, if you put a dam on there to hold any amount of water back, you do have to go high. It has to be a high dam to hold the amount of water. If you don't, it's going over top of your spillway before you hold any water. The lake, if they would put the power company lake in up Davis, it would held quite a bit of water. It wouldn't have been a high dam, but it would have held over 7,000 acres, and it would have held back quite a bit of water to be coming from that direction. They built a dam at Rollsburg. As all of them knows, it wouldn't help anything here. It would help things below Rollsburg, anything that controlled water below, but it wouldn't help it here. In fact, you would have water backed up in the full pool would be backed up clear up through Hollow Meadows. I don't know what they would do. I guess if they don't put the power dam in up at the power plant in Canaan, if they don't put that back there at Davis, I guess small dams is about the best thing they could get to control. I certainly wouldn't want a huge dam above me here. I did not start feeling unsafe down here because it could give us all they building pretty good anymore. But the dam at Stony River holds pretty good. It's a earthen dam. But they do have a problem. I can foresee a problem with the dam at Thomas, no bigger than that is. That dam is old, it's deteriorating. And you can imagine what a mess it would have been if it would have broke when all this, and all that mud, I mean the mud's deep in there, and you'd had all that besides the water. And usually those dams are not going to break unless you do have a high water situation. That's usually when they break. Of course, water squirts out right in the middle of that and up there. If you ever go up there when water's out, you come right out the cracks in the middle of it. And I know it costs too much for them to repair it, and I know they need their water supply and stuff above it, but it is it's a hazard. It's a real hazard. And well, control of water, there's many people against it. I can see a lot of help that the lake up Davis would do for Blackwater River. When they get so much acid pollution in Blackwater River is after a heavy rain and you got pockets of acid and stuff coming in from these old workings and strips and stuff around there. Now the old mine working. It comes in there, horses in when Blackwater River is low, and then that's when it's so hard on your face, it kills them.